Channel 2 Right and beginning of the visit with Rick, this session with Rick and Debbie this Tuesday after supper, the 27th of February, 73. Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the visit, the session with Rick and Debbie. Debbie on Molière and Shirley and Virgil this Tuesday, the 27th of February, 73. Channel 2 Right and the beginning of the session with Debbie and Rick after supper this Tuesday, the 27th of February, 73.
Well, I don't know what's on the docket.
Well,
you got. Where do you stand, Ray?
Well, I have still to finish that report on Mr. Nealon. No, I didn't get that out today.
Yeah. What else you working on?
That and that grant.
And what?
The grant. I'm working through that a little bit.
You got nothing on Mr. Weaver?
Mm-mm. I'm not working on him right now.
You're not going to work on that first aid thing?
Well, I went through that before and
discarded it.
It didn't come out so rich.
I'll do it. It's rich to me. I've been reworking the just you know, restating that grant business. I connected it and I'm wasting time on it, but I keep thinking I'll get a clean copy and get Debbie to put it on her type, and I'll Xerox it, and then we'll have it to work with and forget about it.
Yeah.
But I can't take it any further than it is. Mr. Dodd there's the reason that Mr. Dodd loses out in that
is well, I think I had Virgil on my mind when I sat down to work on it.
Yeah.
And that's
well, by rights he shouldn't be in it.
Berman.
Yeah.
No. Except that I can remember distinctly when I drove away after from Shirley's that morning. I was a little, felt like somebody knocked me in the head with a 2x4. Anyway, my head was sort of going like this. And all I could think about was there were three things about Berman Dodd
mm-hmm.
that I wanted to remember. And those three things were the little...
Yes,
the cubs.
But what... You see, you were taken, as Mark Twain says, of the Mexican plug boys over there. You were taken, and you just, little by little, realized it. And then it was hard to believe.
Well, no, I believed it. I ran. But it didn't, I was taken, because she told me that she wanted me to come, that Timmy was home from school, didn't I want to come down the hall. It wasn't Timmy. It was Virgil. She never introduced me to Timmy. Timmy's 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
It was Virgil. So she was taking me down there to meet. Oh, I got somebody down there for you to meet, she says. And it was Virgil.
Yeah.
Not Timmy. And I thought it was Timmy. I don't react very quickly sometimes.
Well, and you looked around when you were playing pool, and Timmy had disappeared.
Yeah, he left in 5 minutes. He set up the balls and left. Went outside. Timmy sized up the situation right away, but I didn't.
So everybody knew it but you.
That's right. And I actually thought maybe Virgil wouldn't go with us to get the cows. But he sure went. Surely wasn't about to leave him behind.
And then when you got to Miss Mary's, it followed you.
Yeah.
So the whole neighborhood was in on it.
Well, they might have been in on it. I don't know. They sure enjoyed it.
Well, the little bird.
That little bird told me, she said.
Oh, she told you who the little bird was.
No, she didn't.
She did over here that night.
She did?
Yeah, she said they had had a visit from Mr. Virgil, Buck Knight. And he hadn't been over there for 15 years.
Didn't you do that? Yeah. But what little bird? He's a little bird. I don't understand.
It was his little visit.
It was about you. Oh, God. First time in 15 years. You're kidding. Oh, God. We have to draw a picture for him.
You do.
Mary say we didn't talk about much. He said he shot a turkey and that was about it.
And Marvin said
maybe he won't go back to bed this year. And he also said it
wouldn't take you all morning if it was over them cows, did it?
Oh, that's I think I begin to see a little bit now.
Well, Miss Dodd was doing right well, but the curious thing, you know, when she said, did you intend to come in and have a cup of coffee? Of course, she had to join you. And you see, she had to talk about something. She can't listen.
So that's when we got why we let her talk about that gun business. Getting hit in the head with the gun.
Yeah, she couldn't let Virgil go ahead and talk about guns, you see. She had to do it.
I see, yeah.
I'm just going on what you...
Yeah. I see it.
It's easy for her to talk and just listen.
I don't know. Just how much do you want to know about the Bog Knights?
I've had enough.
Debbie says she's game. If you want him on tape.
I don't want him on tape. All I want is John Henry. I would give my bottom dollar for John Henry, but you can't get him. Now, Miss Mary laughing, you gave her apoplexy on this trip.
Uh-huh.
But it seemed to me like this is the first time you had seemed to make an effort to, in here you can do it, you see. You laugh and talk about people, but on paper you just run through it. But this time, you know, on paper you try to make something of it. And how's anybody going to talk about Miss Mary's laughter? Well, I don't know, but you have to do something.
You gotta slow it down enough so that you can say that she's laughing. But it sounds anything that you say about her laughing is a little flat, because you can't, if you say Miss Mary laughed or Miss Mary shook all over, that's not quite getting there. I mean, I think the closest I got to it was saying she threw her head back and opened her mouth so wide you could see her fillings.
That's crummy. That sounds like the Zip Wilson. Sad.
Well, you can either say she shakes.
Well, one, I just read it once. You got her, she threw her head back, and then you got her rocking.
That's good.
Good. Uh-huh. She can't throw her head back and rock too, Faye.
Fall over. She would. She'd fall over if she were rocking and throwing her head at the same time. But she kind of, when before she starts to laugh, she sort of pulls her chin in, you know, and goes like that. And then she throws it back and laughs. That chin pulling in is just sort of the beginning of it, you know. She did that over here that night. She kind of got herself up like that
yeah,
and pull her chin in like that.
So
yeah.
The first part of it, silent.
Yeah.
Well, now, there's more ways than one of saying that, you see. That, it's even hard to listen to Miss Mary's laughter unless you have a feeling for that mirth. Almost you see, a whole way of life is in her laughter. It's
Marvin's just the other extreme. Marvin never laughs out loud like that. He just sort of sits and goes like that. He's so quiet when he laughs.
Yeah, now that's the laughter that comes from that feeling for pranks.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's when it's the most bonding.
But it's still it's still that see, you can't call it simple. You gotta look for words that elevate it. It's still that feeling you see for pranks, like Mr. Weaver with those oxen, the ox bells. Out into the cotton that night.
Mhm. And she was enjoying it so much because she it was a prank on me.
Yes, and she could see that you weren't in on it yet.
Yeah.
That in itself.
That's right.
Is the whole point, you see. That is just the high water mark right there, you see. She knows, but you haven't caught on yet. It's just something that elementary, that fun, that elementary.
Uh-huh.
It's all those words, earthy, won't, you see, they won't work. And it's a laughter, you know, that will quiet your nerves for a week. If I could just hear Miss Mary laugh, just throw that head back, and I could see those jowls, it just quiets my nerves for a week. That's you you describe laughter by the effect of it, for one thing. A lot of ways of doing it.
Yeah, we all catch on. And she laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She starts laughing over here at things before she tells them.
That is always, yeah.
And right in the middle of the talk, too. She'll just take it away from
slightly, but I don't have more.
Yes, she was. And you know, she winds up.
That's good.
Yeah, while somebody else is talking.
Did you turn her head like that while somebody else is in the midst of talking?
Yeah.
Well, I got sort of tangled up in just trying to put down more of what happened. Just elaborate.
I think you handled it. I think it helped it, but I didn't expect you to put that much time on it.
Well, I got started, and I just.
Yeah. I think your prose is a little more muscular now. Now, Debbie, you talked to Ms. Nealon twice.
Yeah.
And both times you came away delighted. And then you looked at it and found that all she is was just a plain old club woman. Now, how did you impose upon yourself like that all that time?
I don't know, it just was the way it hit me when I read it over again, was that all I saw her doing was being in clubs and not really doing anything but following the rules in clubs. And I think it's not in Mrs. Nealon, I don't think. I think it's in the way I wrote it. It's just deadly.
Well, in the second one, you you had that other insight. You see that in her time, she could work in the club and not and it wouldn't do anything to her. She could survive the club. That would help her. And I went along with that.
Mm-hmm. And you saw it change. She saw it change.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, what I had been led to expect was that people called her up and asked her how to hem a skirt or how to plant a flower or.
Well, I think what they call her up and ask her, I don't know. Tomorrow is going to be pretty important talking to her to see. I don't know. I guess I was thinking about Mr. Nealon at the same time, and he is so highly creative, really, in what he does, and it just struck me that she's not in the same way. And I think it was in the way that I wrote it. I just got it, when I read it again, I just got sick of the garden club.
Well, now, I don't think you're justifying that, because the garden club put those mediums down all those beautiful streets, like over in front of the Methodist Church. And the city recreation department taking them all out and putting little plantings, you see, from the florists, a few boxes of them here, there, and yonder. What else they do, I don't know. And the garden club doesn't even sit on them. Sit on them. Ride them. Ride right on them. I don't know anything about
mm-hmm.
it, but that's something you could find out. You could say. I don't imagine they're that tough. I don't know. Now, you see, in a way, it kind of opens up the way feature articles are put together. You see, they delegate someone on the paper, and they get an appointment, go over there and sit for half an hour, and come back with a feature story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you see, what we do out here, you see, we listen to them talk. We're not looking for any little bit of a thing. It's just an occasion for talk in a way. And she's pretty good company. You'll have to go over there and stay an hour or two. You can go over there and stay all day.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still, you know, closing up to her family. She's conditioned to that. That's the one thing I've noticed out here, you see. Of course, we've got so many things right now on the drafting board. It's really not normal to have that much at one time. And it'll be that way just a little while longer. But I'm sort of catching up. I'm getting a few things done. And we won't do that. And we won't have to stay around here. We don't need to stay around here and do all this damn writing that we do. It's not doing us any good. I mean, normally we wouldn't do all that. Most of the time, you'd be out somewhere working with somebody, like Miss Nealon. You put in more time on the French play last night than you have on Miss Nealon. And we're going to publish something on Miss Nealon. I'm trying to pass it on to you. I don't have any special view of any of this.
I didn't say this time on the French play last night, but the night before. It was a real farce, a real Molière comedy. They all the staging.
I don't feel one comment about staging.
Well, that's what made it real funny, though. It's about this doctor who's just a peasant woodcutter, and he has a fight with his wife in the first scene, and she's going to get even with him. So she tells some passing servants that he's really a famous doctor, and he can go back and cure the daughter of this rich man who has suddenly become mute because she doesn't want to marry the man that her father wanted to marry.
All boys, yeah,
the fight in the first scene. They fight around the clothesline, in and out of sheets. The wife is hanging up sheets, and they keep fighting. He'll come down one side of the sheet, and she'll go back up the other side of the sheet, and there he's telling her what not how, what, how. Oh, it's so awful to have a wife, he says. And they just don't stop talking, and he runs up down one side of the sheet, and she comes back up the other side. He says, "I'm going to get you," and then he'll grab the sheet and pull it with him down the line and get it in a ball like this, and he's, "I'm going to do your neck just like this." And then she keeps flipping socks onto the clothesline, and they come down. He picks them up and throws them back at her. So it's real. It's a clever way to get the. Keep the fight going, to give them something to be fighting through and around, or these crazy wet sheets.
I'm not innocent in the stage business.
Molière is spoofing doctors. He goes into the girl's father, give me your hand, and he says, "I'm a doctor, I'll take your pulse." And so the father is sitting down like you are, you know, and this little peasant guy stands there, and he goes, and he looks over at him, and meanwhile the girl's father is clutching his heart. Nothing wrong with him. He's clutching his heart, dying in his chair. That's so silly. And the girl, the only thing, this little woodcutter is drunk all the time, too. He sings this little song in the beginning with his bottle of wine. How wonderful he loves his wine. So his only remedy for the girl who can't talk is to put her to bed and feed her bread soaked in wine, because wine always loses the tongue. So they put her to bed, and he happens to find her suitor lurking about in the garden, strumming on the guitar, and so he says, I know I can cure her now. I have her lover here." So he gets the lover all dressed up in this tall, they both wear these tall magician hats, and the lover's got this wig that comes down, this straw wig that comes out to about here, and then he puts on they've got on magician's cloaks to be like doctors. And they both come on stage, and the girl comes on, and she looks at the two of them, you know, and so her lover goes, like that. She says, she knows who he is. He does eventually cure her.
Why would he spook?
Well, I guess because there were so many people then who had the vapors. He gives a long soliloquy on the vapors that people have. It's so funny, Molière. Every Molière play I've ever seen is terribly bawdy. And he gets this little, the doctor, the peasant doctor, is chasing the nurse through the entire play. He comes into the man's house and chases the nurse all around, you know. Her husband happens to be one of the other servants, so he's always popping out of a cupboard at the wrong moment or something like this. And so the doctor gives an anatomy lesson on the nurse, you know, and the vapors come up here and go down here, you know. He says, he gets through with all of this, and everybody on stage is watching him, you know. Isn't it? It's amazing how much he knows. He knows all these things. And then the girl's father says, "You know, that was very good, except I think you got one thing wrong. I think the heart is on the left and the liver is on the right." And the little doctor thinks a minute, and then he holds his cloak out like this and looks down, and then he looks up again and he says, "We changed all that."
Well, what did your notes have about Molière?
Biography, his life, and then we read Le Misanthrope. When I took French, and my notes went on and on at great length about the contrast in Molière's character that you see on stage in the two main characters. And then went on to say that each one of the five acts was given over to a separate character. Yeah, I just, one thing, we sat next to this in the play next to Pedro Fernandez, who's a great friend of my mother's. Pedro had carefully read the play before he came to see it, and they had two things. They had the play, which was very short, only took about an hour, and then before the play they had a tribute to Molière, and the director stood up and recited a little a biography of Molière, and then they had the first scene of The Misanthrope and the first scene of Don Juan, just as examples of Molière's plays. Well, they started in on the first scene of The Misanthrope, and Pedro thought it was the play, and he kept reaching over and hitting my mother and saying, "My play didn't start that way." My mother finally said, "I don't think it's the play yet." My mother doesn't understand a word of French, but she read the program. So afterwards, we went to a party for the cast, and we started talking to one of the cast members, Pedro and I did, and Pedro said to him, "Yeah, it was very good, but you spoke awfully fast, and I had a hard time sometimes following it because you spoke so fast." And so this boy says, "Well," he said, "actually, when I talk, he goes, "when I talk, I really speak much faster than I do on stage." Pedro says, "Huh." So then I asked her, I talked to a couple members of the cast and asked them very silly questions like, "What do you think of America?" And this poor boy says, "Well," he says, "everybody's been very nice to us. Everywhere we go, we have a fate. But," he says, "I don't think I'm really seeing America." And I said, "No, you're probably not."
All this in French.
Yes. And I said, "No, that's probably right." He said that, but it was pretty hard because they were giving the play all the time. And everywhere that they go, I guess the various French departments sort of look after them and do things for them. But oh, my father's having a marvelous time. Somebody made a quiche, and my father took it upon himself to supply every member of the cast with a piece of quiche. So he's running back and forth between the tables, carrying pie to everybody. He just had a wonderful time. Then I talked to one of the members of the French department for a while. He was born in Algeria. He was one of those French in Algeria people, but he came to America when he was 19, and I would never have thought that he even spoke French as a first language because he didn't have any accent, but he said that they came to America because his brother had come to America, and his parents didn't want two brothers to be separated. So he said, "I suppose you can't understand that, can you?" And so I just sort of went along with him, and I said, "Oh, of course I can." I said, "That's a very European family thing, that all European families are like that." I said, "And in this country, it's entirely the opposite. Everything that you do kicks you out of the family. Anything that a child does is forces him out of the family, whereas in Europe, it's just the other way around." Well, he got so excited, he said, "That's happening to our little girl now." He said, "She's 5, and she's started to go to nursery school. We don't know what to do about it." He said, "The last time she went to nursery school, she got invited to a luncheon afterwards." He said, "We think she's too young at 5 years old to go to a luncheon by herself." Luncheons for nursery school children. And he was really distressed about he said he didn't know what to do because they thought that the child should come home. And I said, "Well, I thought the child should be independent, but I could certainly understand that that was an example of the child getting children in America getting kicked out." that's perhaps too strong a word, but I think that it's true.
But it'd be hard for him to see that.
I don't think he'd ever thought of it in terms of the children in America being forced out of the family. I don't think he thought it of it that way.
The institutions just take them out.
Schools, everything that you do in this country.
And but then you go off school and you marry, and then you go off wherever. You see, you marry way off from home, and then you settle way off farther from home.
Mm-hmm. And it's
I wouldn't send anyone off to school.
The opposite today in Europe, even. Even today, the families, you stay in the town where your family is, or at least that was the experience that I had in Nice with people that I knew, the young people that I knew.
Yeah. Well, now, is your father an admirer of Molière?
Well, my father is a great admirer of France. And French people. He'd read the play before we went, which was more than I'd done. But he didn't particularly like this play, I think, as much as some of the others, but I guess that would make him an admirer of Molière.
Well, you see,
punted that one.
in his business, you see, the theater is one of the great institutions. You see, from Shakespeare on, or even before Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
all through the 18th century and the since Ibsen, and it's just something that you see you just take for granted. So Molière would be a master for everybody, more or less. but he has a stronger feeling for France than.
He just likes the language so much, the French language.
But he doesn't speak it, he just reads it.
He speaks it well enough. He can, you know, he can communicate, then reads it.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of that. Speaking French, I saw the play was over at PK Auditorium. I guess I couldn't get an auditorium on campus, and I tripped back in time because I went to PK, and my old Latin and French teacher was there in the audience. And so I went up to her. She was at the party afterwards too, so I went up to her and introduced myself. I didn't think she'd remember me, and she didn't. Couldn't remember whether I'd taken French or Latin, and I told her that, well, it was Latin, but that I'd gone to Nice and that I could speak French now too. And she said, oh, well, then of course because of your Latin interests, then you went to see La Turbie, which is all these Roman ruins behind Nice. It's a little bit of a Roman temple that's still left there. And I said, oh yes, I had been in La Turbie, but I didn't tell her that the reason that we were in La Turbie was because we got caught there in one of the Monaco car races and couldn't get out because these cars were zipping around the mountain at 75 miles an hour and we were scared to go out. So we were sure the minute we got in the intersection, the car would stall and one of these race cars would come running down. We spent the afternoon in La Turbie watching the race cars go by.
But you didn't disappoint your old Latin teacher.
No, I told her I'd been there. I didn't disappoint her. But she speaks very, she really speaks beautiful French. She was.
Is she French?
She's British, I believe. I would never.
Well, now, what use do you have of the Moya evening?
Speaking French. Hearing French. That's. That's pretty valid because I don't hear it too much. Well, I brought my notes back.
No use for Moya. Sad. Just practice your French.
Any statement I make is not going to be strong enough. Well, he's ridiculing just about everything he can.
Why would he ridicule anything?
Because he doesn't. He thinks that the French society is pretty shabby. So he's making fun of it.
That's not the purpose of enlightenment, to disestablish French society. I mean, Congreve didn't like English society. That's any further away from you than Miss Mary. I don't see that you handle either one of them with too much understanding. As Emerson said, let the subject be what it may. It still requires some comprehension. Including Ms. Neeland. Ms., you want to just sit there like a toad, you see, when I make statement, it makes them too plump. Just sit over there like not on a log.
Your statement standard is they might.
Well, ridicule is a method of enlightenment.
Uh-huh.
It ridicule means laughter.
Yeah.
And it's a very light touch. It's not heavy. They're not reforming anything by some serious method, you know. They're changing the world by just a very light touch. He's spoofing doctors because doctors need spoofing.
Yeah.
In France or in England or anywhere else. It might help them now, except the methods have changed. You wouldn't get very far with laughter anymore. You've got to pass laws. I don't know what you do. It's a very light touch. Well, now, Miss Mary doesn't realize the uses of ridicule, but she still has a light touch.
And the prank is this sheep business. We just do things to her. And the prank.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so disguising themselves.
I don't know. You see, now this is your subject. you're the one that's interested in the Lord. Yeah, I'm not. As a part of the Enlightenment. But that's a very easy approach to it. Mm-hmm. Now, Miss Mary can tell you about doctors.
Dr. Gibney. Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Gibney, she takes a different view of, you see.
Yeah, because she,
But now she can apply, she can apply she's not going to be taken in. Well, I don't know. That's a little remote, applying the method of the Enlightenment to Miss Mary. At least at the moment, I might manage it.
Well, I think this, what you said, this ridicule, is that.
What did I say the first time? I forgot. What did I say the first time here about him? That he was spoofing. That he was making fun of society.
Because it was shabby.
Because it was shabby. That's what I said. And that's where I.
But it's not necessarily shabby. It's the society that he puts in has a very light touch too. Not necessarily a shabby society.
That's the wrong thing.
No?
Yeah,
society not
thing.
Shabby in the 18th century in a way, is it? Society was a very small group of people. It looks to me like
be a long time.
Well, we've pushed it. I get the squint last day or two. I don't know why in the world. I've got them now. I'm not as bad as I had them last night.
It's been pretty bright.
I was trying.
It was bright this afternoon. Yeah,
I noticed you squinting your eyes out there in the sun.
I was looking into the setting sun, so it was pretty bright.
Yeah. Maybe you better wear your dark glasses.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Now, I'll tell you. You can't sit at your typewriter now until you get tired. You gotta. That's against the rule. You gotta be fresh. It has to come without effort. Or else there's no use of it. My trouble is, I just get a small amount of work done. The day is so short, my working day, and I get dense. I slow down so fast.
You always keep bright, Rick.
No, he just slowed down the day.
That's what he said.
Yeah, you can move around. I tell you what I do on that thing. The politics shouldn't go into that, or if it does, just a bare light touch. And you can watch him just like you do. Now that business about the Catalpa that had two posts, 4 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now that all of that was just plain factual.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no particular premium on that. Of course, when it's spontaneous, that gives it a little, lightens the touch a little bit. I'm just talking with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one who's supposed to bring it up, you see, and work it out. And last night, I couldn't see that you made any effort to do it at all.
No, I didn't have hold of it.
You wore me out just like the same way you did the night before, after that first trip. I had to watch every little detail, and I don't want the details. I want to get the direction of it, and that takes the fatigue out of it. That's what I'm doing in here. I'm trying to lighten it a little bit. You see, it's
yours gets heavy.
Terribly heavy. Gosh, yeah. Can't write with a squint, can you?
No.
Well, now, how far behind are you now?
Pretty far. There's no telling. I'm about, let's see, I'm John Wayne and Cole Porter and Moliere behind, and then I am...
On John Wayne, it's just a half a page, and the rest of the page you can put on Cole Porter. What do you want to do?
I'm going to see another one, too.
I mean, that's all it was, but... And you did it. I mean, you did it, yeah, when you were talking on the John Wayne thing.
Yeah.
I just thought you could set it down. I don't know. I see you start off tonight on that Moliere, and you give me all that stage business.
You didn't make a stage, my baby. What are we going to do with you? Well, I'll tell you. My mind hasn't exactly been on Moliere today.
Not too bad about your mind.
You just think it can switch.
Oh, did it?
Can't do it.
That was just the end. The mind was working. I was working her over. She looked at me and she said, she must have been about 10. My mind's just tired. It just won't work another minute. She said to me, "Did you ever have a tired mind?" I'm clear now. I said, "Oh, Sissy, your mind's not tired." Oh, but yes, it is. I think I have to go lie down.
Well, I'm not exactly up on the Neelands either.
I don't know. As I think of it now, you see, if you see that they're spoofing, everybody's in on it but you, in the thing you wrote on Shirley and the boy, you see, that'll make it easier.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. As you don't let it out, you know, I mean, you don't let it out except those little things. that one little thing you see. You looked around and Timmy had disappeared. Well, you don't make anything of it, but you see, next time, the sheriff going along with him on going to teach you to shoot, and she does the best she can. She shows an interest in it, it almost kills her. Misfired both ways, didn't it? Well, and then you got over Miss Marion, you see, little by little, and then you see her laughing, and you know something's wrong. You know something's up somewhere along the line, you see. It's a, the whole thing is spoofing. But you've been to see Molière the night before, but you're not gonna spoof any. Everybody else spoofs but you, because you done seen Molière. You done had your spoofing. There must be a great pleasure in spoofing. It must be. I don't know spoofing. Spoofing, you see. That's laughing at them. You're in on it, they're not. That must be a great part of Miss Mary's relish of things.
Oh, yes. I think that's the thing between her and Louise Graham.
Well, goddammit, don't stop. You make a statement, got no meaning to it, just pure mechanical.
She calls her on the telephone and she'll say, "Now don't you tell. It's not gossip. It's now don't you tell. But this is, but you call up this person and you ask him what he, where he was last night. Now there's a good example that I can't call it to mind.
Yeah.
And you ask him just where he went last night. Oh yes, I know. It's old Phil. You call him and you
yeah.
call him and you ask him where he went. And then
big things. Yes.
And they laugh.
Now there's something in that, you see. There's something akin enough that you can it gives you a little light on Miss Mary. So that you can't talk about a double chin, not when she's that lighthearted, you see.
Century in the whole world to understand that. That taste, it's that body taste, it's that, you know. Also, it's the age of enlightenment. It's the hardest thing. It's the, I can't touch it, even though I didn't teach them. But that's Molière. And also, because when I see her, I make more false steps than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous. But she's not raw or rough too much. But there is some of it. And you know, it was pretty obvious. It was pretty obvious to you the other night when they were over here that they said that he came for the first time in 15 years. Reginald came over.
I didn't catch that, but I didn't think that was why. I thought it was, I didn't associate that with a little bird.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't either.
No, that was just that. But I guess because we know her normally,
mm-hmm.
that's the reason.
I thought Virgil was kind of a regular customer.
No, I hadn't been in the first time in 15 years. And then Virgil. Marvin, you see, Marvin just carried it on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets to go home, you know, after 3 months after fishing season, he goes to bed.
And then he said, maybe he wasn't here for this time. Virgil's probably about 40 or 45. It was a fatal day, but then we went over to see if it racked up the...
You think she wore hot?
Oh, yes. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah?
Oh,
Lord.
Not yet.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be so heavy if I didn't get squint eyes. So heavy.
You're not heavy. I'm the one that's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I just collapsed. I couldn't. You know.
What made you heavy? What made you heavy?
I just collapsed on Sunday. I don't know why.
Doing what?
I don't know.
Sunday,
yeah. I just,
when was Sunday?
2 days ago. How was the day I went into town? To the play.
Oh, was that Sunday?
That was Sunday. I just collapsed Sunday afternoon. Just flat out.
What did you do Sunday morning?
Nothing much. I read Mr. Neal's scrapbook.
Oh. And then you worked with the cows up until too late.
That wasn't it. Wasn't the cows.
When did you collapse?
About right after lunch.
Oh, out here?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I never know till I collapsed.
Well, you had a rather large day the day before.
Yeah, no, I think I just was worn out. But.
Well, you see, what it is, your time in town doesn't rest you. It just, when you come back out here, it just makes you work that much more. You see, your schedule out here would be much lighter. if you didn't go in town.
Yeah.
I think you got somewhere in that little piece. I tell you what to do. I'll doctor it a little bit. I don't think you have to rewrite it. But there towards the end, you can just state it at the end if you want to. It ought to be just little by little. You come to understand what they all know. Yeah, little by little.
Well, maybe I understood a little bit because I kept running.
Yeah.
In both of those things, I left running.
Yeah. That's what you said.
Yeah, I did.
You tired?
Mm-mm.
You gotta get tired.
I'm not gonna get tired.
Yes, you don't have to. Faye does that. She gets off. Serious 7-9 and it starts doing everything. Why is it so? What's she doing? Not going to make any difference, is it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah. I'll tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to go up and read Mr. Nealon's article. I read that funny little article by Fraser this afternoon. That wasn't much use, but I think that article that Mr. Neeland himself wrote might be good. Just it's Mrs. Nealon told me it was all full of...
Mr. Nealon can't write. You don't know. You won't have any idea what he's talking about if he wrote it.
It's anecdotes, supposedly. Well...
You ought to have refreshments.
I'm having it on temperament.
Out there in the store.
I'm going to go look at Ms. Neal. I mean, if Shirley's coming in the morning, we got things to do.
She said she might come in the morning. If she does, I'll let her take that little cab back with her.
I sure hate to see him leave this place. He's the cutest thing on it. But I understand. Oh, he is cute. Why would it have to be him?
I tell you, you pass those others. Why don't you just let them drop? It's hard on a person to have a backlog all the time, Debbie. Just play your desk. That's all you have to do. And I'll get this my desk cleared and on that request for grant. And then we'll get squared away on Mr. Nealon. So we'll get Mr. Wheat done, you know, and then we'll get into that that Emerson thing on the bar.
Okay.
And that will enable me to get my first statement going. And I'll have something to show. Wouldn't that be nice? Let me tell you, I worked in the 18th century for a long time, and I'll tell you where I got what insight I got. It was from an advertisement in Life magazine, a 2-page advertisement of Nescafe. That the Enlightenment got its impetus at the coffee houses when they gave up grog. That was a basic statement. You know, it's just a few things like that. That is all you need. See, you don't need much information. Information is pretty. It's not hard to get, but it's so little insights that come so slow. But if you have to work them all out yourself. You've got to work with a sort of minimum of information. Whatever you're going to do, she keeps them doing the same. Shelley knew less than anything else. He knew how to read a little Greek, just a very little. And he didn't have to be right. And his defense of poetry. got to have control of yourself to where you hear everything that goes on. And then on top of that, you see that little interplay. And that's something you can't do unless you have complete control of the language and of yourself. And a good deal of background with the people that you work with.
Hot water left. I think I'm gonna walk through the shower.
I tell you, nothing like having the 18th century thrown at you.
Well, when you know, when you drive back to the 40 and punt, you just say it's a good opportunity to speak French.
Yeah, say that again. I didn't quite get that.
Well, you can always drop back to the 40 and punt and say it's a good opportunity to speak French.
When you don't understand my 18th century.
Best thing in the whole play was him standing there holding, taking his pulse going. Love it.
But you couldn't tell her that.
Well,
that's not acceptable to her.
I could tell her. Well, I don't see why I wouldn't be. You didn't have to tell her what it's in. It's perfectly accessible to Miss Mary. She could see that. You can see it perfectly well.
What have you told Miss Mary?
What have I told her?
She's been, you've just been there over-eared. She ain't got anything from you.
Well, yes she has. One time I went over, I talked more than she did. I can't remember, I think I talked to her about buying shoes. That was when I had both ankles tied up, and I told her my feet were too long and I had to buy boy shoes, and it sure was hard to get shoes because my feet were so long, and she doesn't listen to me.
No.
She just fidgeted over in the chair, and then when I got up to leave, told me about the driving test. I cried all the way down and all the way back, and I said to Marvin, I said, if I don't pass this test, I'm not having anything else to do with it. Miss Mary.
I've never got much across to her. I tell you what, she hears it, but she don't let on at the time. I hate it. I hate people like that.
You hate people that laugh before they tell you the punchline, too, don't you? You never get on with my mother. She starts telling a joke, and she gets, or anything funny, and she gets two sentences into it and starts laughing so hard she can't finish it. But everybody else has to sit at the table and watch her laugh, except me, because I laugh right along with her.
Like Miss Mary.
My father just, looks the other way.
You laugh, listen to me.
Oh, yeah. How can you not laugh with Miss Mary? Mm-hmm. I was laughing so hard I couldn't talk when she was laughing in there about that little bird.
You were?
Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what I was laughing at. I can't believe I'm so dense.
I even Rick said he didn't put it together. First time he heard him say, first time in 15 years Virgil would come over there.
Face. Well, I'll tell you.
I bet he was.
What?
It's the first time you ever had anybody who slept 9 months. And it was Marvin said, maybe he won't go to bed. Stop. Said to me, that's who it was. It was talking to us out there, and I just couldn't believe it. Because I didn't think he ever appeared without his beard down below his belly. Oh, yes, he comes out when fishing season comes. Hunting season. I can't believe he was there. It was all planned. David to come over. She hadn't forgotten.
Sure
hadn't.
Well, she didn't have much choice. He'd been after her. For a fact, the morning after. Saying so, I talked to her this morning. She said, all you think she has to do is just sit there in the kitchen and listen to him talk about hunting. I guess you're hoping for a little relief. Hey, you've been after her to show him where I live.
Good thing there's no pond down there, he'd be fishing in it.
Well, sir, I'll tell you what I'd do. That's not the route. But if I would go almost any route to hear them talk about fishing. Now and over the last 50 years, you see, John Henry is 70 years old, and that's all he's ever done. And he never gets off the place. Miss Balknight goes to the chain store every Saturday. John Henry never gets off the place except to go out in the lake. see, what irks me is that all these marvelous spirits, you see, are just going to waste around here. And what am I doing? Rewriting a goddamn old request for a grant. And I don't much care. I've had about enough of it anyhow. And look what I could be doing. I don't have to take. You see, here's the thing. Once you get as much a running start, you see, there's just no telling where it would go. You see, actually, you see a good deal through Miss Mary. You see, I see a good deal, Mr. Weaver. And this last thing has opened up Mr. Nealon, where he's more of a spirit than I had ever. It's something nobody else knows, maybe. No, I don't think Miss Nealon would see too much of it. But the one that'll surprise you is this poor little black woman down in front of the house, Miss Daisy. She has a grasp of affairs. There's always another play. She doesn't repeat. She's in a way, Miss Chitty, you see, has that, I suppose, just concentrated riches. That one that you heard is the high point. That's the one that enabled me to stop that 15th of August. We had that already. And when I thought of that, I just sat down and held my head in my hands that anything like that would ever come forth. For what it said, you see, of that talents, the gifts. You see how much of a running start you need in order to see it. Just think that anyone could go ahead and sit down and listen to that. Just cold. It's too much. Now you see, you got a little toll in this. Now you see, you listen to both, yeah, but you don't have a hold of it. And I could help you a little bit, but see, not very much. I can listen to you and tell when you got hold of it, or, you know, when it sounds right. So, see, you could try things out on me. I've learned so much now about where the dead ends are. You see, you can't talk to a lawyer. A lawyer can't talk. Everything he knows, he has to make it an anecdote. He can't talk about his client. Now, you see, old man Adkins, judge up there. There's no end of what he knows about Miss Mary. She can talk about him, but he can't talk about her. You see, your hands are tied. So you lost out. Now you see, and Mr. Nealon, he doesn't report on other people. It's all himself. I don't think he has much grasp of other people. I don't think so. But he himself is interested. Interesting enough that I'd spend time with him. is to find out what the forest is would say about him.
Well, I can talk to Warner.
That'd be the biggest help. You see, the reason I suggested to Rick that he stay away from the information on the trees and get more of Mr. Newell's feel for the trees. Now, he may not be able to do that. I'm not sure that I could. But a lot of times I can get things that he can't get. Because I can hold him to it just a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And if we get him out here, we could get that. We don't have to be out of his place, you see, to get him. Get his feel for a tree. Partly, you see, yes, I see that. Rick doesn't take things out of his typewriter quickly enough. It's gone. I lose it, you see, before he gets it out. He works on it too much.
Mm-hmm.
When you are dead, tell him to bring it on in here and quit working on it. Because all that extra work's not going to help. Half a day is long enough for anything he knows. Half a day. And the thing of it is, you see, putting salt to it is not going to help. With no more critical judgment than he has, you see, the less salt he puts to it, the better. And that works all along the line. See.
All right. I'm going to the shower.
Channel 2 right, and the end of the visit with Debbie and Rick, the session with Debbie and Rick this Tuesday the 27th of Tuesday the 27th of February 73, Channel 2 right, and the end of the visit with the session with Rick and Debbie on Molière and Virgil and Shirley and Miss Mary this Tuesday after supper, the 27th of February 73.